The following program has been furnished and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSCB and KGBC are not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again today. And before we get started, let's remind all that just because you hear us talk about certain tax rules or tax strategies or real estate opportunity, investing opportunities, that you should not rush out and jump in. Please check with your existing advisors and let us know if you need help in the event you have no existing advisors that opine on the topics of real estate taxation, partnership taxation, I guess I should clarify that, or retirement plan taxation and using your funds that you currently have, say, for retirement in real estate private partnerships without having to liquidate and pay the tax that might be due first. And then lastly, we cover strategies that get us either down to the zero tax bracket or as close as we can, given that if you're investing in real estate partnerships, there's a high chance that you will be paying some tax somewhere along the way. And it may not happen for a while. You get the benefit of cash flow without having taxable income. And that's something I should probably explain further. I'll try to remember to do that later in the show today. Or actually, maybe we can do it here on the before we get to the first break. But that's a critical distinction. And I guess I just always assume that listeners understand that with real estate, we effectively were able to generate cash flow that we can access and use to live on without those funds being taxable. And once you understand the magic, it becomes kind of hard to resist this asset class because your returns typically will be higher than guessing and trying to time the stock market, you know, on assorted security classes. But in any event, if you don't have advisors and you want to talk to us about your goals and objectives, if you would first go to our forms page, it's top right, second link from the right at beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com. If you'll complete at least the first step, Form 1, Step 1, client profile, so that we have some idea of what you're about, what your existing, just a high-level view of what you currently have invested, what you're looking to invest, whether you're looking to use retirement funds, etc. I'd be happy to spend some time on a phone call. You can book or schedule that call at the link right next to the forms link. It's the rightmost link, and I'll be happy to spend some time with you on the phone to explain if or how we might be able to sync up with your goals and objectives. What will we talk about today? I tell you what, before we get started, let's talk about what is cash flow versus what is taxable income. And I know some of my small business owners are probably going to say, well, I thought net income was my cash flow. And it may be. Depends on the type of tax treatment that your business is able to enjoy under the Internal Revenue Code. And therein lies a big difference between most businesses and the real estate business, if you want to call it that. We get the preferred vantage point in under the tax code for being able to generate cash flow that's not taxable. And most of that will come from the form of depreciation. And I'm sure most listeners have heard the term. You may not understand exactly how it works, especially with the real estate market, because the real estate assets get a preferable position in that we're able to accelerate the rate of depreciation, unlike most other industries. And I guess there probably are some that might get close, just depends on what makes up the depreciable asset base that they have. But effectively, I can say this with pretty much certainty. Real estate is the single industry that gets to depreciate assets that are increasing in value, increasing in age of said assets, and yet we're able to write off the value of what we paid and maybe improved the real estate with. And we're able to do so now that the one big beautiful bill has passed. We know that we're going to get back to the full value on bonus depreciation. I believe it'll be the full value. I haven't looked at some of the details under the new act. It just passed, a week ago or so. But if it's exactly as it was in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is what they claim they were doing, they were keeping those sunsetting or the provisions that would have sunset otherwise, 1-1-2026. So those are going to stay in place, and I presume we'll be back up to the 100% level of the cost basis on the bonus depreciable qualifying assets. But in any event, we're able to write off significant amounts of bonus depreciation immediately upon acquiring those properties. And that's a huge write-off in the early years. And in fact, I mean, I've seen situations where, you know, maybe an investor that put $100,000 into one of these private partnerships had a K-1 that reflected losses in excess of $100,000. And of course, you're wondering, well, how can that be? And, you know, the issue again is we get debt and we get favorable terms on that debt. Now, we do have other limitations, such as the at-risk rules. We also have the passive activity loss limitation rules. So the fact that you get a K-1 that reflects a huge loss, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get to write off those losses in year one, but you will likely get most of those losses over the life of the partnership. And if you haven't written them off by the time you get to the end, well, then you'll get most of them when you exit that partnership. Otherwise, you have to wait until you've got a year where you've got significant income from real estate or other passive activities which have generated income to be able to write those losses off. But it's still an amazing, even when you do the math on that, it's an amazing industry, an amazing asset class, and it's a way that effectively you can turbocharge the rate of return that you see on those investments. So again, cash flow will be generated from an asset or a partnership that has significant depreciation because the dollars that they paid in large part were funded with debt that a lender put up. And so that's how we generate an exorbitant amount of depreciation. It's not reflected by an expense, a cash out-of-pocket expense, I should say, on the P&L. These are non-cash expenditures of funds that generate more than a dollar-for-dollar relationship on the money that got spent. And even the borrowed money, in most cases, we're going to get to write off some of that amount of money. So it's, again, it's not like going and buying a stock where you get literally no write-off. You basically get to use your cost basis of this, what you paid for the stock, to offset a gain when you exit or sell that position later on. You know, when you look at what had to happen for the one big beautiful bill to pass, I mean, if you just step back in time, it's just spectacular that that piece of legislation is sitting here today having passed and basically is the predicate for much of the Trump agenda. You know, the funding, it wasn't just a tax act, it was a funding bill. And now the money that's in that bill to tighten the border, to generate, you know, any one of a number of cost reduction programs, it's just remarkable. And you look at the complexity of the provisions, even in the tax arena, you know, and I'm going to say it. I mean, I'll say this: some of the tax provisions, like no tax on tips and no tax on Social Security, boy, there were a lot of cards being shuffled in and out of that legislative deck of cards, if you will, and they've all got limitations. It's not a carte blanche. Oh, you had $40,000 in Social Security, well, you pay zero. No, there's other limitations where you may get a piece of non-recognition. Just like with tips, you can't go earn $100,000 in tax-free tips. You can earn a lot, and it depends on the facts and circumstances, whether you're single, married, etc. But I think there's enough there. I think the GOP, Trump, etc., I think they were smart the way they rolled it out, because they understood how sensitive it was. It was, I would say this, they were a lot more thoughtful than when the Biden administration said they were going to forgive all the loan on, or the interest, or the debt rather, on student loans. And they thought about, well, wait a minute, what do other people that have to work in jobs that don't have tips or overtime? And by the way, you don't hear the overtime piece get discussed, but there's a lack of or there's a reduction in tax on overtime as well. It's not just the tips. And so as a result, by including a lot more people in that net, there's a lot more buy-in. And I think it's just, you know, again, it's just remarkable how that, the finesse of that legislation. But anyway, let me get a gulp of coffee there to help my dry throat. Anyway, I hope I did meander a bit, but I'm hoping the explanation of taxable income versus cash flow is helpful. And by the way, the taxable income side of that comparative, that's, take a normal business, a small business you may have where you sell, I don't know, medical equipment as an example. You're basically going to pay tax on the bottom line after cost, and there's no, typically not much that's going to be of the cash flow component that goes, I mean, all your taxable income theoretically would represent your cash flow, whether you're going to spend that cash flow to buy more inventory or supplies that you resell or whether you're going to pay yourself. But there's usually very little in a sales operation that is non-cash or of the nature of non-cash expenditures. Well, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our first break. We will circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking a little bit before the break about the concept of cash flow versus taxable income. And for those of you that might not have understood which one is best, we obviously would prefer to have the tax flow without the taxable income component. And that's absolutely possible within the context of real estate, especially these private partnership syndications. And, you know, it's an asset class that's been very, very hot or popular over the last 20 years or more. I can say 20 plus years because that's how long I've consulted and invested in those types of assets. And yet there are hardships along the way. And, you know, we've had some here in the recent past with the debt markets. The bridge debt loan is, you know, the culprit in many cases. And I was just reading today, I had email from a client that was explaining the end of one of the deals that they were in. And, you know, they're actually in one that's got a potentially a better outcome than some of the others I've seen, where they're going to get some of their original capital back. It's not just getting off the hook with the lender, which has been a real triumph as of late. You know, if you have a partnership that has gotten in trouble as a result of the interest rate increases, and when they go to exit, I mean, they're just looking for anything to get out because of the lack of cash flow. They don't want to go into foreclosure or go into bankruptcy, and that's what has happened all too often as of late. But, you know, time is it's a strange thing in the real estate market. It's almost up there with location, location, location. And timing in this particular property's case, you know, as you see cap rates start to settle back down, you know, every click on the clock going downward has a big impact on the value of the net operating income that's being generated by the property. And as it turns out, this property a month ago, or say 2 or 3 months ago, would have been lucky to get any of their capital back. And now they're looking at a scenario where they've actually got two offers that would give them a positive return of, you know, a portion of their capital. And that's rare in this market. And we've seen some of the best operators in the multifamily space that have really taken it on the chin. And unfortunately, those partners, the passive partners that had put their hard-earned money into these deals, they're ending up with nothing as a result. And it just puts a real emphasis on a couple things that we've warned of, and we've tried to admonish lead partners or the sponsors where we can. And that is the notion of taking significant upfront fees out of these transactions. Who's going to put that money back when these deals go under? And the question, or the answer, is nobody's going to put it back. And I would just tell you that until that dynamic changes, you might well prefer to look at the small apartment market, where yourself or yourself plus three or four other folks of similar financial and time availability. And I really don't think, I mean, my experience has been the time is not a critical component. It is from a tax perspective, but I can tell you right now, if you can structure a deal correctly, and I'm happy to work with you on that structure, you could buy a 8 to 20 unit apartment and generate significant losses off of that property that you wouldn't have to wait. I mentioned earlier about the passive activity loss rules. You could potentially sidestep those because you would qualify, again, based on meeting certain rules, you would qualify as a real estate professional, and then you could deduct those losses immediately against your other income, including W-2 income that you and or your spouse may have. And before you start saying, well, you know, I just don't have time, I can't go out every day and run that apartment, hey, small apartments engage management companies too. You don't have to be the one that gets out of bed in the morning to go run that beat up old class C-minus apartment. And my thoughts are, you know, three or four of us folks, us passes, folks that would have put $100,000 or $200,000 into a larger complex, how about let's step back and let's look at some of the better located small apartment assets where we don't need the overhead and the fee structure of the syndicators that are running these big complexes. Because if you think about it, and I'm often prone to use baseball illustrations. I played a lot of baseball as a kid. I've had cousins that made it to the pros, one of them to the big leagues. And I can tell you, actually two of them to the big leagues. I can tell you that the larger apartment complexes, given the fee drain that's coming out of those things, being paid to the friendlies. Forget about the third-party stuff outside the partnership. Just look at what you're paying your lead partner. You know, besides giving them a 20 to 40% override on cash flow and profits in the deal, they're also taking anywhere from, I don't know, as little as 2% maybe up to 5, 6, maybe 7% or more of the cash flows along the way. You know, the acquisition fee, the debt placement fee, the capital raise fee, the refinance fee, the disposition fee. It's just an onslaught of fees that take money out of a deal with no mandate that they pay it back if the deal goes south. And I'm not saying, hey, they shouldn't or should either one take those fees, but they shouldn't take them until they've earned them. I can tell you that. And I'd also tell you, if they're not able to claw those back, don't take them. You know, if you want to reserve them, set them aside and take them only after you've earned them, okay, I could see that. If you get me my equity multiple that you originally pro forma'd and showed, hey, if things go right, this is what you should expect to get, well then, okay, how about we use the same logic and say, well, if it goes right for me, then it can go right for you. But we're not going to allow it to go right for you right out of the chute. And then if things go off the tracks, there are no funds to go back to the passive members like myself if I'm invested in a transaction because the money's gone. And I would just tell you, don't go in a deal like that. And I know people are listening to me saying, are you nuts? Where do you think I'm going to find a deal that would not force me to put my money in and watch it chewed up with fees before we're at the finish line? And all I can tell you is there are many, many small apartments around the world. I mean, around the country and around the world for that matter. I you know, as many of you may know, I live here in Bangkok, Thailand most of the time. And I can tell you there are tons of small apartments over here. Now, that said, this isn't a market that I look at as in terms of an investment. It's a totally different model over here, unless you're involved with buildings that are renting to the Western, the foreigner market. Well, then, okay, in that case, the metrics are similar. But if you're talking about a normal, a local Thai apartment building, those are returning rates of return down below what we could get on a T-bill maybe in America, and they're kind of looked at as T-bills over here. You know, I know we've got friends that own their own companies over here that they don't like keeping money. Ever since the big currency crisis back in the late 90s here in, well, it was here in Asia, but Thailand's the one that kind of kicked over the lantern, if you will, that everything caught on fire from. But ever since then, they don't trust banks. And so what they do trust is a condo that they've paid, you know, anywhere from, geez, I've seen these things that are, I mean, it's hard to believe. They're 300 square foot, maybe $25,000 to $30,000, have built-in furniture. And, you know, I've seen, we've got a neighbor that buys them four at a time, you know, in kind of a modular layout, so they can rent it as four studios or a couple of one bedrooms or one four bedroom. And, you know, they just keep stacking those up. It's just like Monopoly for them. And they've got a factory that does pretty well, and they can take some of those cards off the table from time to time by selling, but, you know, they don't make a lot of money. It's not that kind of market. It's not like the U.S. where you buy a condo, although that said, look at what condos have sold for in Houston. I know I looked at HAR recently because I was trying to compare some of the condo pricing to what we're selling some of our condos in San Antonio along the Riverwalk there. By the way, a shameless plug, anybody that would love to live in the nicest city in America and have, you know, a River Oaks appeal, only it's got a Riverwalk running through it, touch base with me and we'll try to work out a transaction for you. But bottom line is, I noticed when I looked on HAR at condo listings, there were condos that were 20 years old that literally weren't selling for what they sold for at new 20 years ago. That's insane. And yet people still fall for the Madison Avenue sales pitch that we all need to own a home. You know, that's what we've been taught, and that's what people can continue to think. And that's one thing. I'm not a big Grant Cardone fan, but that's one thing. Of course, he talks out of both sides of his mouth. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, tells you not to buy a home, and then he's got, you know, a couple 40-plus million-dollar homes. Maybe he's telling the truth when he says they're for Airbnb. I don't know. I don't believe much of what the guy says. He double speaks on many topics, but bottom line is he is essentially correct. And what I think what he's trying to say is your home is not an investment. I've been saying that since the day I opened my practice in 1985. And I can just tell you, in Houston, Texas, or anywhere else other than maybe California, certain California markets, a home is a lifestyle choice. It is not an investment choice. And again, there are exceptions. California's one. Maybe New York has climbed back out of the doldrums. It's amazing how quick the condo market there came back, and apartment rents. You know, we track certain markets. I don't have any clients invested in New York, and that's a dicey option there, just right out of the chute, just due to a number of things like rent controls and other crazy rules. But in any event, I would tell you that the multifamily market, for the most part, each submarket that we used to like, each market that we used to like, they've come back. They're not 100%, though. There's a lot of distress still in these debt structures that have projects for sale. And, you know, again, the one I was reading about today, they were projecting 3 months ago that they would not be returning any of the investor money if they could liquidate in the next 4, 5, 6 months. And yet they were pleasantly surprised that other buyers in the market, there's a lot of demand in certain areas. And this particular property was in Dallas, where there were several large-scale apartment buyers that they weren't just looking at NOI. They were looking at the asset quality of the property. And, you know, you can value these assets in a number of ways. In net operating income, which is basically just at a high level, it's the cash flow or the income, and then you multiply that by a cap rate to get to a, or divide it by a cap rate to get to a sales price. And, you know, that doesn't always tell the story, because if you, let's say you want a property like that property, you got a choice. You could go buy some land somewhere nearby, maybe, maybe not, but you could always buy and build your own property. Well, what do you think that's going to cost you? And in most cases, it's cheaper to buy something that's already there than it is to go through the, you know, property, you know, the grant, locate the dirt, deal with all the assorted permits and regulatory, the morass of regulatory issues. So you know, you're, if you have the capital, as do these private equity funds, I might add, it's actually cheaper for them to pay more than the net operating income might be, because, you know, I don't think I've ever met a buyer that didn't have a plan for generating a higher net operating income than what the current owner was doing. That's what makes the multifamily market go round. And not only are there many buyers that think, oh, well, I can do better than that mom and pop, there's banks and other lenders out there that'll believe it, and they'll put up the money, or most of the money, majority of the money, for that group to go in and buy that asset. So, you know, it's an active market now. We're excited that we're seeing deals. If you have a transaction you've run across, maybe on crowdstreet.com or realtymogul.com, fundrise.com, some of the leading syndication websites, feel free to let us know and say, hey, I'd like to see what you think about this one. We will engage if we think it makes sense to represent you, and we'll try to help you from stubbing your toe. Not to say that, you know, we're a magician or we're a soothsayer. We don't read crystal balls. We're an accountant. We're not a magician. And yet we can tell you if the rental growth rate projections are in sync with the current norms. We do track, you know, probably about, 15 to 20 metrics on assorted markets and submarkets around the country, and we can spot unusual or unreliable projection assumptions pretty easily with that information in hand. In any event, let us know if you need that kind of assistance. Let's go ahead. It's time for our last break. Let's go ahead and take that break, and we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
We asked parents who adopted teens to share their journey.
Nathan has taught me to embrace the moment. Age-wise, I mean, I'm in my late 60s. I'm old enough to be his grandfather. Will he be embarrassed to acknowledge me as his dad? I think the most important thing we can do is let them know that they're safe, that they're valued and cared for and loved, and that they're important.
I knew I wanted to be adopted by him because of how he taught me to be the person who I am today. And it's coming from a dad that didn't expect to become a dad, and I feel very proud to be his son.
That was what he needed, and he was what I needed. every day is full of new opportunities. That's what it's been about, realizing the simple things that it takes to make such a huge difference in these kids' lives.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I want to be big dream. Just like me, with big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we've been talking about multifamily asset investing, private partnerships involving those assets. And, you know, I think it's important every time we talk about this that we mention in some way the intersection of using your retirement accounts, be it IRAs or solo Ks, that's a personal self-directed 401k plan, because, you know, the asset choices that you have are significantly better, I would suggest, than trying to pick and time the market. And I know there's a lot of folks that would disagree and say, well, you know, I should just park my IRA or my solo K in some index funds. Well, you know, if that were your approach, you didn't need to set up, in most cases, you really did need to set up a solo K and maybe not a self-directed IRA. But you know, you've got some limits on just how fast. And I'm not going to argue with people that want to say that that's a good strategy. It is a good basic strategy. But if you're, you know, 58 to 60, maybe 65 years old, and you're behind on your retirement savings, index funds are likely not going to give you enough throughput, enough lift, if you will, to produce the income that it's going to be required to see you through the rest of your approximately 85 to 86 year old life expectancy if you're male, 87 to 88 if you're female. So what to do? And you know, I mean, the issue we have is there's more risk associated with any piece of real estate. I mean, some real estate much, much less risk than others. So, I mean, you basically have to determine what your risk adverse level is going to be. But I would suggest to you the ability to, for you to forecast or review private placement memorandums where the pro forma information is there, there's a lot more clear forward-looking projections than you're ever going to be able to do with an index fund. And I don't even know exactly how index funds are put together, but I don't think you've got the ability to review the guts, the projections of, I don't know, what is it, several thousand companies that make up some of these indexes. And you know, to a certain extent, anything that's massive enough to disrupt the multifamily apartment market in the U.S., don't think that's not going to have a significant effect on most index funds. I mean, I believe it will. And I would suggest the ability for real estate operators to turn the ship around as it may be necessary is probably somewhat more achievable than trying to affect the operations of all the components within an index. Now, are there exceptions? Yeah, there are. And, you know, you look at a lot of the distress now, and we can't say we hadn't been here before. It was simply a matter of not having enough of a safety net with regard to capital in the debt structures that most of the transactions over the last 3 or 4 years were undertaken with. And I don't know. I feel like that probably the message has been received, and I think syndicators in today's times, meaning here in 2025, because we're not done yet with the distress, but I think there's been some reactions, there's some new approaches to covering potential rate increases moving forward, because we still could have them. I mean, some smart people are continuing to say that, you know, it's likely that we haven't finished the inflationary trends. And so, you know, you got to pay attention and, you know, don't just hand your money over. And I would tell you that, again, if you're going to do that, hand it over to an old mom and pop looking to get out of the market. And, you know, they may not. In fact, I would tell you, I've met many older mom and pops that would have sold if they weren't worried about pretty much one thing. You know what that is? They're worried about how they're going to pay the taxes on the gain that they're going to have when they exit that property. And that's something we can help you with. So if you're talking to any sellers like that or potential sellers, in fact, those are the type of people that won't have a for sale sign in the front yard of that apartment building. They're not going to be found on CoStar or LoopNet or, you know, whatever. I forget which one of those sites they actually have forward facing now. They're owned by CoStar owns LoopNet, which is kind of a de facto commercial MLS, even though it's not MLS. But, you know, there are strategies. We'll work with you. You find those properties, and we will make it worth the while of the seller to do business with you because of the tax strategy that we can implement to help defer those gains out over their children and maybe grandchildren's lifetime and still allow them to get some cash flow. So take a look at small apartments. Go look at, I believe it's apartmentbuildings.com. Let me look here real quick. I was just looking at this site. I look at this one occasionally to see how many more listings they've gotten. Yeah, it's apartmentbuildings.com. It's a Connect CRE site. They own this site, and I don't know, there's tons of properties on this site. And, you know, you don't have to be, you know, you don't need to necessarily be sitting in, let's see, where, here's one in Abilene, here's one in Akron, Ohio, Sacramento. These are real buildings, real properties. And, you know, when you look, I think the National Apartment Association, last time I'd look, and this is a number of years ago, they had, well, I don't want to say a number. It was a huge number, of what they called small apartments. I may have recalled incorrectly, but I know it was north of 100,000, maybe several hundred thousand buildings around the U.S. And, if you think about it, anything over 4 units typically is going to be deemed to be a multifamily. So anyway, take a look at that site if you're interested, and be thinking, you know, if you've got money to invest, why don't I join with 3 or 4 or 5 other people, and we all take on a role that qualifies us as active, so you're not selling a security when you involve the three or four other people that you're going to partner with. And you can eliminate the cost of the syndication. You can eliminate the fees that are paid to whoever in the big partnership is going to be the one that's running the show. You're going to pay them. And that is a security. If you're giving your money to someone else to generate a profit for you, that is a security transaction. And it may be exempt from certain registration requirements under the crowdfunding statute. It doesn't compare to you, me, and three other people joining together, each active in that transaction in one facet or another. Maybe you tend to the social media posts. Someone else tends to interviewing leasing staff. Someone else is in charge of reviewing leases or managing contractors. I mean, there's a number of ways to divide up the burden of work among the purchasers so that we each qualify with the requisite number of hours as real estate professional. We not only avoid the syndication requirement or the registration requirement or the disclosure requirement, we also avoid a significant amount of fees and other costs that a syndicator will be taking out of the deal. So anyway, I think we're at the end of the show. I just had a little bird whisper in my ear, i.e. a producer, and we're glad you could tune in. We hope you'll come back and join us on Sunday, AM 700 at 7 a.m., whether you listen to us on KSEV or KGBC, and I forget the numerical call sign, 1540. Another bird just whispered in my ear. So 1540 a.m. or 700 a.m. or a.m. 700. Join us at 7 a.m. Sunday. Thank you for tuning in today.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.